Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Sarah, what are you doing? Her mother surveyed her 16-year-old daughter's room, which looked like a tornado had hit a clothing boutique. Oh, I'm just sorting out some stuff for school, Sarah replied from the depths of her closet. They're making you bring extra clothes to school? It's a community service project Carrie and I and Jen started. Our counselor likes it a lot. Well, what is it exactly? Her mom wondered aloud. It's pretty simple, really. Sarah popped her head out of the closet. You know, when we go to church or to a job interview, we need to look good, wear the right stuff. Well, we figured that teens in shelters and places like that might need some good things to wear. Especially if they're trying to get any kind of a job, agreed Sarah's mom. That's a great idea. Yeah, finding the clothes shouldn't be too bad, but it's the rest of it, the organizing part, that could be a real headache. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about community service for our kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today is an expert at community service for students. Pam Metter has worked 30 years for Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland. Currently, she coordinates the Student Service Learning Program for that school system of 140,000 students. She has two grown daughters. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Pam.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Why do numerous school districts have community service requirements for students?
Well, I believe numerous school districts are putting a service learning requirement into the curriculum because they see the value of learning that occurs outside of the classroom and outside of the school. And they find that students that are often involved in the community have improved attendance in school, have improved interest, and are actually making superior academic gains because of their involvement with the community. Students, through their community service activities, are gaining information about the needs in their communities and feeling empowered, ways that they can also address those needs, feel successful, feel responsible, learn leadership skills. Just lots and lots of positive things for students, and I think school systems across the country are seeing service in the community as a nice balance to the academic piece that occurs in the classroom during the instructional day.
Is there crossover a little bit with academic skills? I heard the word responsibility. That was a biggie.
Well, yes. Many school systems include the service component as part of the curriculum. So a teacher might take an essential indicator in her curriculum and match it to a need in the community. So the students may learn about a need in the community as attached to the curriculum during their instruction, but then have an opportunity to go out, for instance, in a science class and maybe clean a stream or grow bay grasses or do something on the school yard that would cut down on stormwater runoff or something like that. So teachers more and more are seeing connections between the curriculum, what's occurring in the classroom, and the needs that are ever present right outside the door in their own communities.
That must be empowering for the kids to see an actual thing rather than a theory on a piece of paper.
You know, the kids love the service aspects of these classes. I had a student say once, you know, we just love to get our hands dirty. It's fun.
Exactly.
It's fun. So it really takes it away from sitting in a desk, writing with a pen or pencil or on the computer, right outside with their sneakers on and their trash bags or their garden tools, actually getting involved, meeting a need in the community. They love it.
In your school system, how is community service defined?
Well, in Maryland, we have a state graduation requirement of service. So any student who graduates with a diploma must do a certain amount of service. So much English, so much math, so much social studies, so much science, and so much service. So In our county, we have a plan that every student will do 75 service learning hours before they graduate. And each county in the state has a different plan. All counties require 75 hours, but all counties have a different implementation plan that's been approved by the Maryland State Department of Education.
What are some of those differences?
Well, you know, the majority of counties in the state allow students to earn all of these hours during the instructional day, and the hours are specifically attached to curriculum courses. So they may have so many hours attached to a science class, so many hours attached to an English class, and that type of thing. In Montgomery County, since we have such a large network of nonprofit tax-exempt organizations in the community, our plan that's been approved by the state allows students to go out into the community and under the supervision of nonprofit tax-exempt organizations get involved in addressing real need. So our plan allows kids to earn hours in certain courses. It also allows them to earn hours in after-school clubs and in the community with nonprofit tax-exempt organizations.
Can you give us a sense of the range of options that students have for their community service experiences, some specific examples?
I referred a little bit to the science curriculum, how students can address a need on the school ground or in the community. Students also in social studies class might be involved with studying homelessness or vandalism or persons with disabilities. And in that case, something that they've learned in the classroom, then they can turn it around and have some type of a service project where they would address a need, also understanding the social significance of those things. Oftentimes in school-related clubs, school-sponsored clubs and organizations and PTAs, they have blood drives, they have food drives, they have lots of things that pull the whole school together so that the students can be aware of the needs in the community and also can put little projects together that would address those needs. The student government, of course, is a great organization in most schools. A lot of times the PTAs have homework clubs after school, where the children come that need homework assistance and the older students come and provide the tutoring and support for them. So there are many, many opportunities that are available for students to get involved in service.
Is there some kind of supervision by someone from the school when a student is, say, involved in a social service organization as a helper?
Parents need to know the supervision is really key in this service learning, in the community service idea. If it is a school-sponsored event in my particular county, then the supervision is provided by a school teacher or a school staff member. If the students are out in the community, if they're doing something on a weekend or in the evening, that supervision is generally by a representative from the nonprofit tax-exempt organization. Now, those adults that represent those organizations have had some training and been given some information about what the expectations are. And, you know, we assume that they are following those expectations. However, we encourage parents to be very vigilant and know about the organization, know who the supervisors will be, know where the activities will take place.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on community service for kids.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pamela Metter about community service for students. What about if kids want to do something creative and do their community service in a way that hasn't been done before? I was thinking of one couple of students I know who put together a comedy troupe and went and entertained old age homes and other places, but this was obviously sort of off the beaten path. Is there a room for that in most community service programs?
you know, Sandy, we're seeing more and more students doing the type of thing that you have just described, coming up with their own ideas, what they want to do, programs they want to put together. And it's absolutely fantastic. It certainly shows that the students are feeling so empowered. And we see this often occurring later on, maybe when students are in high school, after they've had a chance through middle school to kind of see the opportunities that are out there, to get involved in those different opportunities, and then also just to think, oh, I think we need to do this, and putting a group of students together. The part that we need to make sure of is that the students are supervised. And routinely, we ask that the activity occur in a public place, in a church, in a library, in a synagogue, rather than in an individual's home, in someone's rec room, in the basement, or something like that. We like it to be out in the open, in a public place.
You've seen a lot of kids come through the system, so you have sort of an institutional memory of how all this works. What kinds of long-term benefits have you seen happen as a result of this kind of experience?
I think sometimes parents think, oh my, just another thing to do. But we see such growth in our students when they think seriously about their interests and how they can take their interests and their skills and apply them to really be involved with a need in the community. We see tremendous gains in leadership. Students that are able to be integral parts of groups, to take a turn, to take a lead, to show responsibility. Self-esteem, kids feel empowered. And incredibly so, at middle school level, our program allows kids to start being involved in this graduation requirement the summer after they complete grade 5. So we have 11-year-old young men and women out there visiting nursing homes, building relationships with older gentlemen and women, and feeling so good about it that they go back day after day and bring more and more of their friends. Kids are having the opportunity to explore careers. Many times after being involved in a tutoring program, they'll say, I was pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. Or those kids really liked me. Or I didn't like that. You know, I don't think I want to be a landscaper. Or I think I'd rather be a doctor. So through these experiences, whether they're in school classes or after school clubs or directly in the community with nonprofit representatives, kids are finding careers that they're interested in, courses they want to take next year in high school or go on to college and study. I think the real hope here is that they will become lifelong contributors to their communities. That's what we really want. And when they find meaningful opportunities and high-quality opportunities, it keeps them coming back, hooks them. And oftentimes they say, Dad, come on along, or the younger brother or sister. So it has a very real ripple effect out into the community and in their families.
Okay, so here's the flip side of that. Have you noticed drawbacks, and what are those?
Certainly in Maryland, where service is a graduation requirement, we do get criticized from time to time about mandating service. And I think it can be at a point where the students sometimes think, oh, am I going to get service learning hours for this? I mean, if I do this, am I going to get service learning hours? So the flip side would be it's difficult to mandate service. In a lot of families and a lot of situations, it's really not necessary. Parents are involved in the community, whether through their religious organizations or civic associations. And what we find is oftentimes the parents say, come on, this is a family thing. We're all going to go out Saturday. We're all going to be involved in the clothing center. We're all going to go to the food pantry and stack the canned goods. So in many cases, it's the parents that are showing the students how they can be involved in the community and setting that example. So kids can learn about service from a variety of different avenues. But in Maryland, I think the feeling was they wanted to make sure that students got involved civically and politically. And as a state, they wanted to make sure students had an opportunity to become lifelong volunteers. So they did mandate it as a requirement for graduation. In the long run, I think it's a good thing because I get many phone calls and comments from parents. Thank you. This is a good thing. My student has a lot of time on his hands, particularly in the summertime. Why not be out there and involved in doing something positive and helpful for the community? Many parents have even said, I just said to my kid, just get it over with. Do that requirement and get it out of the way. And then I found, oh, he really liked it and he wanted to go back. And I was really surprised. So we're seeing that the younger students are when they get involved in service, the greater the likelihood they continue the service. We do have a service requirement. They have to do 75 hours to graduate. But more and more and more students are surpassing the 75 hours. It's not about the hours anymore. It's about going to that volunteer fire department and feeling like they've made a difference, or going to that office, the Alzheimer's Association, and feeling like they've done something that would help eventually their grandmother or someone in their family. So there are just wonderful benefits to this.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on community service for kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back. We're talking with Pamela Metter about community service for students. What if the match doesn't work out, Pam? Are there some red flags parents should watch for when their kids get involved in volunteer programs?
You know, this is something that it's very important for parents to be involved with. Students greatly benefit from the involvement of their parents when they're selecting a service activity to be involved in. I think the parents are helpful to be there to maybe talk to their child. Oh, Johnny, you're great with pets. You've always liked cats and dogs. Maybe you'd like to go and do something with our local animal shelter. Maybe the Humane Society would be a good place for you. So sometimes for parents to make suggestions that would help students consider meaningful opportunities for them, it's very important for the parents to be involved. The parents need to know about the organization, about the policies of that organization, who will be providing the supervision, what the students will be doing. They're going to collect canned goods. Okay, where are the canned goods going to go? They're going to collect clothing items. Are they going to be distributed to people later who really need those clothing items? I think ultimately the parents need to be sure that the organization is legitimate, it is meeting a real need in the community, and that their children are going to be carefully supervised and supported. There are opportunities and situations where students get into a circumstance that's not a positive one. And that often happens when the students and the parents are not made aware up front of exactly what the expectations are. For instance, we had an organization that was very involved at the holiday time in wrapping gifts. And the people would come to the mall, buy gifts, and then take them over to this particular stand, get the gifts wrapped, and give a donation to a nonprofit organization. Well, we had a little boy who saw he could wrap gifts, and he called and signed up to go wrap the gifts. Well, he did not have a very successful experience. He had never wrapped a gift before he got there. He'd opened a lot of gifts, but he'd never wrapped any. And he did a pretty sloppy job of it. So that was not a very positive experience for him. So we've encouraged nonprofits then to say, these are the skills we need you to bring to the job with you. You need to be able to speak in Spanish, or you need to be able to write carefully or work on a computer or do data entry. You know, these types of things, if organizations can identify what the skills are that the student needs to bring, then that makes it a lot easier for the student to have a good match. Signing up for something that looks good and looks like fun doesn't necessarily mean you'll be helping out the nonprofit organization, and we want that too. We want the students to learn and grow and serve and develop new skills, but we also want to support the nonprofit organization. They have a mission to accomplish, and we want the students to be able to help them address that mission. So it's kind of two ways.
You were saying that parents need to be sure that the organization is legitimate and so forth and so on. Isn't that something that generally the county school system or the state system goes ahead and checks on before they put them on the approved list?
Well, we do have a list on the website of organizations that have a little tag saying they are approved for student service learning in Montgomery County Public Schools, and opportunities there that also have a little tag saying they're approved. But that simply means that the organization has come forward to the school system and to the Montgomery County Volunteer Center. They've shown what their policies and procedures are, evidence of general liability insurance, and they've identified who will supervise the students and what activities they want the students to do. We have not had a background check of the organization. The school system has not done a site visit of the organization. We have probably 500 organizations that we know that they are legitimate nonprofit tax-exempt organizations, but we have not made a visit to each one of those sites, nor have we done criminal background checks or fingerprinting of the people that are in those nonprofit organizations. So ultimately, when the organization goes on our list, it simply means they've come forward to us, they've shown proof of their nonprofit status, told what their philosophy and their mission was, and agreed to our guidelines, meaning it would be in a public place, the students wouldn't be financially compensated. So it's critical, really critical, that parents are involved with the organization. If there's any question about the legitimacy, I would receive a call like that, or the local volunteer organization. But on the other hand, the majority of places where students are going, the parents know those organizations. They are their religious organizations. They are their civic associations. They are their local scouting troops, Audubon societies, and park service. So I think oftentimes the parents and the students already have an idea. Oh, Mr. Hendricks is there. I know him from church. Or Miss Miller, she's a teacher and she volunteers there. So that's the best way, is to really know the organization or do a little upfront investigation, ask a few questions. You know, when you collect all of these clothes, where are they going? I mean, are you selling them then, or are you actually donating to people in our community who need them? It really is a good idea to make sure that the students are legitimately involved with nonprofit tax-exempt organizations who are addressing real need locally and globally.
Unfortunately, we have to close at this point. I'm sure there's lots more to say about this important subject, but if you wanted to leave parents with some resources where they could find out further information on this subject, what would you suggest?
Well, many communities across the country have volunteer centers, and they are often attached to local government agencies. Volunteer centers are a very good source of local service, organization, and opportunities that need volunteers. The website 1-800-VOLUNTEER.com is a national system that can identify local organizations and volunteer opportunities with those organizations. Many hospitals and schools have volunteer opportunities available for those that are interested. And also schools that have international baccalaureate programs and leadership training programs often have lists of organizations that are looking for student volunteers. The Youth Serve America website, ysa.org, is also a good resource for students who are looking for organizations that have volunteer opportunities. One more site I'd like to mention, www.mcpssl.org. That's Montgomery County Public Schools Student Service Learning.org. So there are many opportunities out there, many organizations looking for volunteers, and certainly in this current climate, there is a renewed interest in getting involved in the community and making a real difference. So I would encourage all parents and families and students to find the needs in their community and see how they can get involved to address those needs.
Well, you have certainly given all of us a lot of information to start with. So, Pam Metter, thank you so much for talking with us about community service for kids.
Thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Mention show number 410 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents Perspective programming. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Donations can be made online through iGive.com, GiveDirect, or MissionFish at eBay, or you can mail checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Elizabeth Buckle. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt. Mm-hmm.